Hey guys, we actually recorded this episode with Mike Pondsmith on Transformers the Movie for the Darker Hue Patreon, but we're so excited about it that we wanted to make sure that the regular listeners of Star Animals hear it as well. But afterwards, because Mike had to go at the end of this, Chris and I actually ended up recording even more content afterwards. So if you want to listen to a version of this episode that has almost an hour of additional content, definitely need to contribute to the Darker Hue Patreon and contribute to that. And you again hear a massive bumper length episode for this. But this is also a really great episode, and we're again so appreciative of Mike Pondsmith and the folks at Artellsorian to arrange this fantastic chat. Enjoy.
One shall stand, one shall fall. But this isn't Optimus Prime. It's Mike Pondsmith, and I'm here to not kill your cyberpunk character.
I'm Eddie Webb.
And I'm Chris Spivey. And today we talk about Transformers the Movie on a very special episode of Genreless.
Wow, you picked up a great beat on your supercar stereo, Jazz.
You dig it, huh, Spike? Let me rev up the decibels for you.
A little extra music there by Tony Bacala, who does some really fantastic remixes.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Welcome to Genreless, where, Mike, I feel like you and I have been talking about Transformers off and on Facebook for a while now. So I guess for people who don't know who you are, and like they live in a corner of the world somewhere, to tell us about yourself and your relationship with Transformers.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Mike Pondsmith, and I'm mostly known for this obscure game called Cyberpunk.
Never heard of it.
Well, which basically is a game in which, you know, you almost damn near become a Transformer, if you think about it. You know, you get body parts that are metal and all that. And when I'm not dealing with Cyberpunk, my original game design, my first one was Mechton, which is a giant Japanese robot-style game. And basically, somewhere along the line, one of the first of the Mechton expansions was called Road Striker. And it was essentially, at that point, there were a lot of Japanese anime where you had your mecha turn into a car, you know, Galvian, right, for example. Yeah. And it was kind of fascinating because I had not at that point seen Transformers. And so a friend of mine said, "Hey, this is like Transformers." And I'll tell you more about that friend later. It's kind of an interesting sub story. But basically, I went, "Oh, okay, I'll go check out Transformers." Well, I didn't really until I came up to Seattle from San Francisco on a break with Lisa. She got a kidney infection. I got the flu. We're both in our hotel room hacking our lungs out and being miserable. I go down to the nearest Bartels, which is a local drugstore, and they have MicroMasters.
Oh.
And I go, okay, well, I can't do anything right now. I'm sick as a dog. I got her medicine, and I'm going to buy a bunch of these little cars. Because I remember this Transformers thing, you know, and basically Flint telling me, you know, yeah, this is like Transformers. So I went back and I played with MicroMasters for the entire time I was there. And parallel to that, they started bringing out reissues of the Japanese MicroMasters, which, if you remember, they also combined.
Right.
So I'm in here, you know, buying those and going down to the KB all the time, picking that up. And, you know, uncountable buckets of Transformers later between me and my daughter. Dolan is almost as bad as I am. I have a lot of Transformers. In fact, within 20 feet of me, I have at least two buckets of Transformers I'm sorting through right now. So, yeah. I among other things, besides Cyberpunk, I mess with Transformers.
I feel you. I mean, I'm not the toy collector, but certainly in terms of the media collector, like I have so many DVDs of so many different shows and whatnot.
Yeah.
But for me, like I was a kid when Transformers movies came out. So I was the perfect age to be traumatized by Optimus Prime dying.
Yeah, I was a little older than that, but you know, I looked at it and I kind of went, yeah, that's going to mess with some kids' heads. Yeah. I knew kind of why they did it. I had just gotten into the beginning of, you know, my career in game development. And so I kind of said, oh, yeah, you know, somebody's doing a refresh on a property, but whoa, this is harsh. It killed everybody in the first, like, 6 minutes, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris, I mean, what was your experience with Transformers movie?
I remember when it first came out, I walked, because living in Alabama, we didn't have a car. I walked the 2 miles to the theater to watch it for the first time, and I was super young. And I remember seeing Optimus die, and it broke me in the theater. And then I had to walk all that way home, like living that trauma by myself till I broke down to my grandmother when I got home. And she just told me, it's just a cartoon, get over it.
Dude, get over it. No. It's, you know, I have met people who have renamed themselves Optimus Prime at some of the conventions. So, this is taken seriously. Like I said, I was a very young adult at that point. So, you know, I'm looking at the movie and going, okay, they went there. They did it, you know.
And that was something that's really interesting about the cartoon is that a lot of people were I criticized it and it underperformed the theater because it was so violent. And a lot of times it was like, well, they're robots. No one would care. But I mean, when you're having people say things like, I'm going to rip your eyes out in robot terms, or, you know, shooting one of the main characters in the head on screen.
Yeah. You
know, it's brutal.
it was actually. Oh, sorry, Eddie, go on.
Chris, actually, go ahead.
Oh, Chris, sorry.
When they built them and they gave them very specific archetypes that kids could latch onto as they watched them on the television show. So they're just not robots. They're people that they grew up with. They formed attachments.
Right? Yeah. And that's one of the things I find fascinating is that they did do such a great job. I think they actually did a better job attaching personality to them than they did with G.I. Joe. Yeah. You know, and Larry Hama was doing both. And you know, you understand and relate to these characters even as they change form. And so when they go too far out of what you expect, for example, you know, the version of Starscream for the first Bay movie where everybody went, wait a minute, what's that? You know, it looks like a taco chip. People make those connections. And for me, I think the most amusing one was IDW. Comic company had the license for a while. They seriously dug into it and they went back to some of the Japanese stuff and they resurrected characters and you got to know these people. And I would get, I used to get a book called Lost Light that they did. Mm-hmm. And on there was a relationship between two of the robots. And my wife would come back, you know, when the new comic came and she said, so how are Rewind and Brainiac, whatever, how are they doing? And I'm going, okay, so you're sitting here wondering about the relationship between two gay robots who don't actually have sex and who are, you know, a tragic romance. And I'm going, they got you. You know, you have now gone over to, it's not a random character. It's a personality I know all about. And that fascinated me.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the reasons why the movie resonates so well is because you're right. They have these well-defined personalities. They have a fantastic voice acting cast, both through the cartoon and the stars they got for this. But also as a result of that, because they were so brutal about killing off toys to make for the next toys, you end up with this movie that's about the horrors of war.
Yeah, yeah.
In this kid's cartoon.
You go from fishing, you and Daniel out fishing, to, oh, wait, they're blowing up our ship, you know, sort of thing. Yeah, it's interesting. One of the side notes on her is Flint Dilley, who did a chunk of the writing on that and did a ridiculous amount of the writing on the original TV show. Yeah, Flint and I have known each other for I don't know how long. And it was actually amusing because as I started getting Transformers, I would occasionally get his POV having done it. And then later, you know, I met some of the other people, Jay Bacall and so forth, and I got their POVs on it. And so, you know, I kind of looked at it in many ways as this is how you construct a world that people are going to care about, and they're going to care about the characters. And here I am, like, you know, 30 odd years later, and people are writing me about, you know, so what really happened to Morgan Blackhand? And, you know, is Johnny Silverhand really like this? And, you know, how come this didn't work out? You know, and I'm going, okay, there are people out there right now writing fanfic about, you know, what was essentially a demonstration character. Mm-hmm. You know, Morgan was not there as a character I played for a long time. He was like, it's just how the rules were, so I'll use Morgan. But you begin to realize that, yeah, people tie to that. People mm-hmm. care about characters. Lisa, my business manager, and my wife as well, she always says, if they don't care about the characters, you can't sell the idea. They have to care about the characters.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I've always had a deep love for this franchise, because it's certainly had its ups and downs, and it absolutely is a toy cartoon. But the movie, this movie is, everything is kind of firing all cylinders. And from what I understand, mm-hmm. at Remove, I've only talked to Flint like at conventions and whatnot, but I understand it's like, mm-hmm. there was a bit of seat of the pants happening while this movie was being released.
Yes, there was from what he tells me, there was a lot of seat of the pants, including probably some stories I can never tell.
Sure.
Basically, and I was talking to Bacall, you know, I kind of got another sense, and Christy Marks, who was kind of watching the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got a sense that they were doing things that they got kind of as part of their mission from Hasbro, but going, how are we going to pull this off now? You know? And that's interesting because it's serving two masters. One is the story and the other is the needs of the corporation that, you know, is paying for the whole darn thing.
Right.
But, they had to fly by the seat of pants because nobody had ever done anything like that. You know, I mean, think about what characters in kids' cartoons were like, you know, in, I guess that would have been the 80s. It was still pretty tame.
Yeah.
You know, you did not expect Johnny Quest to, you know, be machine gunned down or something, you know. Dr. Quest, no! Blam, 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 you know, didn't happen. And
the impact of Transformers the movie also changed the G.I. Joe movie that was coming out afterward. So that changed mm-hmm. how expected it was.
Yeah, it opened up a door, and what was kind of, I thought, interesting was that it followed things that already happened in anime back in Japan, mm-hmm. where they don't really see it as much, you know, kid stuff. And so, you know, I was kind of used to, okay, this character, you know, dies in the, you know, second season, man, we clear out everybody,
right.
you know, and, you know, the band hammer comes down from Bandai, you know, your character's dead, you know, you, Roy Foker, fall over, you know. And, you know, people go like, yeah, Robotech had Roy die. And I'm going, no, you know, originally Macross, because Macross was deadly serious war, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, the way we kind of cleaned all that up. And so I think with the movie, kids entertainment shifted at least from, you know, very small kids into at least, you know, 12, you know, 13-ish, just preteen, where they were starting to deal with, you know, more serious things. You suddenly at 11, you realize, yeah, people do die. Things happen, you know. I'm not entirely in control of it.
Yeah, and it's I mean, it's interesting because you're right. Like, I feel like that was a moment where anime was just starting to influence America, but America didn't quite understand what the influence was yet. And so mm-hmm. the movie is kind of an intersection of all those forces, and it really hitting home and going, oh, toy commercials can do this now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I know it led to a whole bunch of that became the formula for a decade.
Oh, yeah.
Like I just have been reading a fanzine about Doctor Who almost went this route, where it got mm-hmm. a cartoon and then eventually led to a cartoon movie in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It ultimately fell apart. But I mean, but part of the reason why it fell apart is because they're trying to figure out how to make toys for Doctor Who, because that's what you do now.
Yeah.
A lot of it is because of Transformers.
Well, also, yeah, it's the scream of Chakra for Doctor Who is not great.
Yeah. No, well, yes. It's funny because, again, it's got to be characters you latch onto. I think Doctor Who, I always liked Doctor Who, but I kind of knew, you know, I used to look at Blake Seven, you know, so I knew what Japanese TV, or not Japanese, English TV was like. But people I know didn't get anything about Doctor Who till David Tennant showed up, and it was like all these women I knew suddenly went, well, Doctor Who's young and hot, man. And they're like, you know, and I'm kind of going, yeah, he's kind of a teddy boy dude who, you know, and they're going, man, you know, and I'm going, this guy was Barty Crouch? What? You know, and I mean, you know, all of the women I know were all kind of going, yeah, he's got something, you know, and I'm thinking, I never thought of Doctor Who as a sex symbol. And then what I watched was, you know, the subsequent iterations desperately trying to get back what had happened there, you know, and sometimes it really didn't work. And then other times you kind of went, yeah, they're almost there, you know, but that was one of those where the right character at the right time manages to get everybody to become involved in that world. Right. You know, they have a good entry.
I could talk about this movie all day, but I probably want to get into actually talking about the movie itself. Is there anything else that anybody wants to kind of cover before we dive into the plot?
So I am not as schooled on Transformers as the two of you. I admit that. I'll say that now. I could make a GoBots joke, but I'll pass. Why did they have to get such a high quality voice cast to come in for the movie compared to the television series?
Yeah, it's interesting. I talked to Flint once about that, where he was kind of like, yeah, Orson Welles was really amused that he was playing a giant robot. And little did he know that was going to be his last role. You know, no Oscar there for playing, you know, a giant robot. You know. But I think at that point, you know, there was enough reach in Hasbro to get a couple names. And once they got Orson Welles, you know, people went, oh, well, I guess it's giant robots and it's legit.
Right.
You know. But yeah, the choices were really interesting. And some of them, you know, I mean, we're still, you know, using pretty much the same cast for the mainline characters in Transformers. And that shows, you know, Peter Cullen is going to have, until he falls over, he's going to have, you know, people going, yeah, you're Optimus Prime, man, you know.
Right.
And I remember I was actually amused because he ended up playing Ramrod in Saber Rider. And I'd be like hearing this voice going, it's Optimus Prime saying, you know, ready to roll. And somebody on the internet did a parody of that where Optimus Prime is sitting around and was it Ramrod? At any rate, he ended up doing both voices as a character going, all right, all right. All right, Transformers, you know, roll out. And I said, thank you. And he's going, God, I hate this. You know? But there's an amazing amount of talent. I think what happens is you get involved in it and you start thinking, oh, this is actually kind of a meaty role, you know.
Yeah.
How often do you get a chance to destroy an entire planet, you know, and be essentially planet-eating God? So,
And I mean, like, even outside of like that, I mean, even the main TV cast, I mean, still you had like Scatman Carruthers, you had Casey Kasem. Yeah. I mean, there were some names even just in the normal TV shows. So, I mean, just fantastic casting for both. And then, of course, on top of that, you get, you know, Leonard Nimoy and Orson Welles in there.
Oh, yes.
Like, Judd Nelson is hot off of The Breakfast Club right here. For
Yeah.
Like, the peak of his star at the moment, and he came and he did Transformers. Mm-hmm. Like, how did they pull that off?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's Susan Blue, probably. Transformers initially, I think, was blessed with really good voice casters, and then Susan Blue, who did RC, got into voice direction, and then she is fantastic at getting talent together. And I think it's how that trend has continued. I mean, like Transformers Animated, which was 2007, I want to say. Had like Weird Al Yankovic playing Wreck-Gar, and I think Robert Stack came back to play Ultra Magnus. I mean, so it was just ridiculously good talent.
Yeah, I mean, so, they had just a heck of a lot of people doing really good stuff there. And, you know, the I think it's also you get a certain spark of just really good writers together,
mm-hmm.
and they push each other. You know, I was at one point doing a TSR project, and I ended up basically, this is how I met Flint, doing Buck Rogers, and also, you know, at the same time, Christy Marks, and then other people tied to that. And those were, you know, some really smart people with a lot of really interesting ideas. And I like to call it the Jerry Anderson factor. You get back in the 60s, I guess it was, this guy in Britain couldn't get a job on BBC or get his live action TV show done. So he ended up doing puppet theater stuff, you know, and that became Stingray and Firefly SL5 and eventually Thunderbirds. And it took off because the skill of the people involved, you know, Derek Medding, for example, who, you know, did most of the really great special effects stuff out of Britain in those times. And, you know, all the music tracks and things, John Barry, you know, and you're going, it's only that these people were there in this lightning in a bottle moment. And at the time, I doubt they were thinking it. They were just thinking, wow, we're doing something really fun.
Yeah.
And we're having a good time with it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think that's part of what goes down in these situations is, you know, I don't think you start off and, you know, and think, wow, I'm doing something really great. I think you start off and go, you know, this would be really fun to do. Mm-hmm. And then you start thinking about things you can do with it, you know.
Totally.
Whatever.
Totally. Yeah. Okay. Do you want to read the plot, Chris, or do you want me to?
Before we get into that, because you know that I love my segue.
You do.
Eddie, I may be sharing a behind-the-scenes secret that you told me, but if I wanted to know how many script iterations I potentially went through that you could track down for this movie that you may have read that are currently on your hard drive, not to call you out in front of Mike how I am right now, how many would you say there are?
I only have two of them, but I know there are more.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like that about Transformer movie as I am about Blade Runner. You know, within 20 feet of me, I have like everything Blade Runner, you know, that could probably exist. But yeah, I know Flint told me there were a lot of problems just figuring out where they were going to go. And he did a lot of coming in and writing and rewriting. And I think, you know, several other people did, because it was hard to muscle the entire thing around where it had to be.
Right. Yeah. Because the drafts I have are actually by Ron Friedman.
Right.
And then Flint came in and did, for understand, a pretty heavy rewrite after that. And then there was some last minute rewrites even during the voice session. Mm-hmm. I understand.
Yep.
So, yeah, there are a lot.
tons and tons. Yeah.
I will not hold you to shame. How about this? I'll read the first bit, and then we can either talk about it and I'll switch over, or we can play it by ear how we do for movies.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Summary of the plot. We're giving a big thumbs up to Wikipedia. In 2005, a sentient artificial planet known as Unicron devours a planet along with all but one inhabitant who flees into space aboard an escape rocket. Elsewhere, the evil Decepticons have conquered the heroic Autobots' home planet of Cybertron. The Autobots, under the leadership of Optimus Prime and secretly operating from Cybertron's two moons, prepare a counteroffensive to retake Cybertron. Prime sends a shuttle to Autobot City on Earth for supplies. However, their plan is discovered by the Decepticons, who hijack the ship, kill the crew consisting of Ironhide, Prowl, Ratchet, and Brawn. I'm stopping there because
they killed the doctor.
The most violent death and the most offhanded comment by Megatron, like such heroic sentiment.
Yes.
Sticks to me to this day from when I first saw it.
Yeah. No, it's what I always love in that entry is, you know, Optimus Prime saying, all we need now is a lot of energon and a little luck,
right,
or something of general effect. And, you know, going, well, that's not normally what you hear, kids cartoon. this is going to be bad. You know, when I hear this sort of thing in an anime, you know, this is second season. They're going to need a new robot pretty soon. And the hero is going to be tormented or something, you know, because that's the way this works. The funny part was actually to jump in for half a second. I once asked Jay Bacall about anime because that's what we were known for doing back then. And he really didn't know anything about it.
Really?
So I spent like an hour filling him in on like what was happening in Japan. And, you know, the American animation market was very much closed off then. So they, you know, a lot of people didn't know about it. But at any rate, sorry about that. On to the plot line.
That's interesting. No, I know.
We did a whole season, a whole anime run for one season, and we talked about how it came over to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We talked about like Voltron and Robotech and all that.
Yeah,
I do want to linger on the death of the Doctor because it is the most graphic one for the whole movie where he's shot and boils from the inside. That is how you start when you see this movie as a kid.
Yeah.
9 years old in a theater. Just say, Eddie.
Yeah, death is not blam, you know, and it's a flash of light and they fall over. It was, you know, stuff boiling out of his mouth, you know, and you're going, this guy has innards. Okay, that's really, and he's the Doctor, you know.
And I mean, it's something that I've tried to explain to newer fans of the franchise is like, you can look at the Michael Bay movies and they may be on the surface, be a lot of violence, but this movie, this animated kids movie, is much more violent than any of the Michael Bay films.
Yeah, well, Michael Bay has that antiseptic violence,
right?
That, you know, and with, you know, with a good quip. When Megatron, you know, such heroic nonsense. When Megatron says that, it's not a throwaway quip like a Schwarzenegger movie. It's this guy is really evil, you know. Yeah.
You see the arm cannon on Megatron pulse too. It's one of the rare moments they focus in on it, and you see it go up and down in a shot of power. Like that is graphic. It's not like Bilbo and Sting from the 70s movie where he kills the spiders. Like they swirl around in nothingness. This is like, oh!
Yeah, I always watched it and said, how come he isn't blowing a hole through the side of the shuttle? Okay, I'm not going to ask.
Is this a part where I could talk about riffs and MDC versus SDC? Is that where we're going right now?
Oh, yes.
My favorite, it makes no sense if you think about it moment in this chunk, though, is Laserbeak is watching over them before the attack and records them stuff. And it goes back and they put Laserbeak as a cassette into the thing and he plays back the scene. And Laserbeak is so good, he can actually dramatically edit his reports to get different camera angles of Optimus Prime during his reports.
Well, yes, but yeah, I mean, you forget that the cassettes are all sentient, you know.
Right.
Rumble and Frenzy maybe don't seem that sentient. Yeah. But that's because they don't know which is which. Ah, geez. So, yeah, I mean, you forget, and one of the things I liked about later on was they started showing the relationship between Soundwave and his cassettes and realized they were all kind of like, not pets, but more like these guys who work for me and live in my chest, okay?
Yeah, they're co-workers in my chest.
Yeah, exactly. Think of my entire life is I'm essentially a large-scale version of a talking program. You know, I'm Skype. Laserbeak, Skype.
Oh my God.
Rumble. No, you're Frenzy.
All right. The two of you with your vast Transformers knowledge, would you please explain that to the listener that may not understand the difference?
Which part? Covered a lot of topics.
How they confuse Rumble and Frenzy. Why do they confuse them?
As I recall, the animation scripts for these two characters, who are basically your classic wise guy hoods, they basically work for or work in Soundwave, who's a giant cassette recorder. And so they are the cassettes that go flying out of his chest, which is an idea I have to explain. I had to explain to my kids, you know, what's that?
That's a cassette.
We used that before there were discs, you know. I mean, before the internet? Yeah, kind of. So, to explain to people, the they use the same model for each of them, Rumble and Frenzy, who are supposed to be partners who fight all the time with each other. And one was blue and one was red. But they, in the series, I believe they had one was red and the other was blue, and then they confused it in the movie. Mm-hmm. And everybody from that point went, well, it's canon either way. Okay. So this led to literally this last year, they reissued those figures and people were actually fighting over, you know, is the Rumble figure the one they just released, or was it the Frenzy? You know, and I had actually, when I ordered them, I had to check, you know, because you kind of went, okay, I'm ordering this on eBay. You know, does the guy who's selling it to me have any idea which is which? Because I think I already have a Rumble, or is it a Frenzy or something, you know?
Right. Yes, and so endless internet fights of Rumble is red or Rumble is blue and Frenzy.
Yes, endless fan wars, which if you think about it, are, you know, that's a pretty tame fan war for those of us who remember the Star Wars and the Sonics wars and all. Yeah. Oh god.
Or which color was Han's coat? Was it brown or blue?
It depends which movie.
Digression. I recently have been reading the Marvel Comics adaptations of the original, like, Star Wars, like the Howard Chaykin art ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Han absolutely shot first. It happens.
Oh, yeah. Han shot. Yeah. Well, the great part is I actually have those. They're probably worth something. But a friend of mine got them for me, and I didn't know anything about Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, you're going to like this. And I remember the cover because it was like Luke Skywalker buffed up saying, swing that lightsaber, Obi-Wan, or we're dead. And they're all like, you know, chickening out, like, you know, and you're looking at it going, okay. So I thought it was going to be just terrible. And as it turned out, I got conned into seeing it with my sister, one of her roommates who I was dating at the time, and one of my old roommates from college. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to the movie, and they all go, yeah, you got to see this. I said, okay, is it worth it? And said, well, you're going to love Han Solo. You're Han Solo. And years later, I kind of go, I was Han Solo. What the hell? But, The thing about it was that, yeah, much like the dress, everybody always fights over the colors.
Yeah.
And that's Rumble and Frenzy are basically the blue, or is it yellow, dress that period. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But at any rate.
All right. Do you want me to do it or do you want to do it?
We'll bounce
or Mike, would you like to do it? You're our guest, so we don't want you to feel left out.
Okay, then. All we need is a little Energon and a lot of luck. I cannot do Optimus. I do much better, you know, Megatron.
Better bag.
Why throw your life away so recklessly? That's a question you should ask yourself, Megatron. I once was treated to Flint doing like all the voices, like they were sitting around in a cafe or something arguing with each other. And I said, you really memorized this, didn't you?
Wow. You know? Wow.
And yeah, he could slide seamlessly between all the voices. And we're sitting there, you know, I think we were in a restaurant he was doing that. But anyway, I'm going, yeah, I'm never going to be that good, you know, but I didn't have to do it year after year. At any rate, in Autobot City, Hot Rod, relaxing with Daniel Witwicky, son of human ally Spike Witwicky, spots the overrun shuttle and a deadly battle breaks out. Optimus arrives with reinforcements just as the Decepticons are near victory. Optimus defeats many of them while having an incredible rock and roll track behind him. And engages Megatron in a final battle, leaving both mortally wounded and forcing the surviving Decepticons to retreat, boarding troop transport Astro Train. How are we all fitting in here? To return to Cybertron. Yeah. I know too much of this stuff.
Totally.
My daughter and I have been swapping horrible jokes like this for I don't know how long now.
Okay, oh before you get into it, Eddie, because I know that you have a really pertinent point, I have to ask, why don't we have the actual Autobot City that transforms here instead of Autobot City? I don't remember his name. I do Metroplex? Remember there's an Autobot city that transforms.
Metroplex?
Yes. Yeah, Metroplex.
Because the Metroplex toy is kind of garbage.
They did a better version of it later.
True, but the very first one. Literally, he just lays down and spreads his legs. That's pretty much the transformation.
Yeah, I'm not even going to go there. I think I'm not even going there, Eddie. But at any rate, yeah, I mean, I have, if you pause for a moment to see, I have
the arc.
I have the arc, which, if you think about it, was what they were shooting up in, you know, half of the scenes. I'm going, yeah, Metroplex should have been able to get up and slap these guys around if he was as badass as they say. You know, or at least, you know, send out some of his, you know, allies, whatever. I don't think they did the toys because in those days it was just too darn expensive.
Yeah.
And I have an original Metroplex a friend of mine gave me. And I got that, and I got the new Metroplex when it finally came out in the 90s, I guess. Mm-hmm. 90s? 2000s. And I'm going, this is 4.5 feet tall. This is about 1.5 feet.
Right.
Okay. This, you know, we have improved, you know, and if anything, now I have a lot of these figures, you know, the larger, what they call Titan scale. And it's like, okay, I had to move them because they were blocking the TV set. And my wife is like going, I don't mind, but I can't see Snake Discovery when you've got this over here. All right. I'll move it.
I guess. Fine.
You just watch it, though, because I happen to know that Megatron is going to send his large purple spaceship figure that I just got after you, you know.
It's funny because, like, when people talk about the movie, I mean, they rightfully talk about the attack on the shuttle and how brutal it is. And they kind of miss the fact that this scene's also really brutal. Like, three Insecticons get murdered, and like, right off the bat. Hot Rod just runs over one of them. By the end of this scene. Huh?
Don't forget Cup. He's in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Cup shoots in my shoes. Like, I actually, because I'm this nerd, I checked. By the 20-minute mark, the death count is Brawn, Prowl, Ratchet, Ironhide, Windcharger, Wheeljack, Optimus Prime, Megatron, Starscream, Skywarp, Thundercracker, Shrapnel, Bombshell, and Kickback. All of these people die.
Oh, no. Starscream does not die. Okay, you're right. At the 20-minute mark. Yes. Okay. At the 20-minute mark, yes.
Right.
But, you know, I wanna, that's bad comedy.
I want to challenge both of your nerd credits then, as your collectors. Mm-hmm. All the characters Eddie listed off, how much is that Hasbro makes when you have to go buy replacement toys for those?
You do know... Okay, Chris, you do know that Hasbro last year brought out the Shuttle Death set where you have Ironhide and Prowl and their chest are blasted. If you're getting a figure with the chest blasted open. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, you know, that's kind of hardcore, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a figure you only get to use once. You know, okay, you know, such heroic nonsense. Plonk the figure down. Okay, that's done. Yeah. And I'm going, I'm not spending $40. I can go get a hammer and do this. Yeah. But yeah, it is symbolic of how much we tie to those characters and then how many iterations those characters have. You know, I collect Transformers, but you know, I'm not like half the people on the Reddit board that I run across who are like, you know, Optimus Prime shouldn't have this color red. He should have. And I'm like, it's still a cartoon, you know. But it's a cartoon that you spent, you know, probably $400 or $500 worth of various Optimus Primes.
Absolutely.
By the way, anytime you need to have me shut up, I will.
No, we'll I mean, we brought you to talk
that
about
will never happen on this, on this podcast.
No. We are made of digressions. We once almost noped out of our entire concept. We digress so much. But I mean, honestly, it's weird. Like, this scene is so influential, and yet I don't have much to say about it. I mean, yes, it has the most iconic confrontation between Megatron and Optimus Prime to the point where it has been endlessly reiterated.
I want to take a step back, though. Like, this is the most humanizing moment for the entire movie between Daniel and Hot Rod.
True.
Like, the two of them together. This is a moment where you're supposed to engage with Hot Rod and imprint as a kid on the Hot Rod. Mm-hmm. Because he's going to become uber important later. We don't know right now, but
right.
He will be. And so that's when you're supposed to say, oh, look at that. That kid with Hot Rod. That's me. Hot Rod's my buddy. I'll forget all about Optimus Prime's imminent demise. Shortly in a minute, it's Hot Rod's my buddy.
It's true. You could see that plan happening, and it just didn't happen that way.
Although, me personally, I will say, I like the design of Hot Rod because his lasers come from, like, the tailpipes on his arms. That is beautiful, perfect, so much better than having to carry a gun that everyone seems to constantly lose, and is also why Megatron got to shoot Prime. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I never understood entirely. I know what they were setting up, but then it kind of gets separated because Daniel is taken away into another part of the plot line. And I remember somebody did an insane parody back in, I guess it was the 90s, that covered the Daniel and Hot Rod relationship. And I was trying to find it the other day because it's quite a bit rude, but it's fascinating because they, in that parody, ask some of the dumb questions like, you know, so in the middle of that battle, what happened to the fish that they had hauled out of the river? You know, fish looked up at Burning Shuttle, said, I'm noping out of here, man. What was a river doing uphill from Autobot City? And, you know, didn't anybody notice Autobot City sitting out there in the plains, you know? I don't know. Somebody must live out there. I see trucks driving out there all the time.
Do they have jurisdiction? Like, the Autobots, are they a sovereign nation? Is Autobot City, you know, separate? Or are they part of a different geopolitical structure?
Asgard came to Earth.
Because as a kid, you can just hand wave through that. And as an adult, you kind of ruin it because you're asking those dumb questions.
Right.
And then later, you find yourself. Yeah. You find yourself as you go through as an adult later, trying desperately to find a way to reconcile this. Yeah. Oh, they must have a deal with the humans over in, you know, Los Angeles or something, you know. And it's because you're as a kid, your mind has no problem dealing with this. What you have is you care about the characters. So as you watch Megatron show up and kill all these guys, you know, everybody's blowing each other up, you realize that all the show always had was Megatron shot at you. No one ever hit anybody. And Megatron got run off. So you didn't take him seriously as a villain.
Right.
And now he's going down. He's doing full on, you know, taking him out, you know, and you're going, okay, this stopped being, you know, the shit is now real. Because before it was, you know, there was nothing that would change. The basic plot line was always, you know, Megatron comes up with a half-assed plot, Starscream screws it up a bit, they go out and they do it, they don't get the Energon, it's all over, you know. And now it was like, okay, no, they're winning.
Yeah.
You know, and that's if they had just taken out a bunch of Decepticons, what would have happened is you would have gone, well, yeah, okay, the Decepticons got unlucky, but they took out heroes, and the heroes are never supposed to get hit.
Actually is a good point, in the sense that this scene helps to establish the new cast, because it's so dark and because the characters we know are getting killed off. So you have Springer saying, like, I have better things to do today than die.
Yes. And the Han Solo of Transformers.
He is. But also, like, you're like, you know what? I'm with you, buddy. I also don't want to die today. I'm not
warm.
Yeah. Not a good day to die.
So two questions for both of you before we move on. First, is Optimus's death because of Hot Rod? It's a hotly debated topic. I want to know your takes.
I don't think so. I think Optimus is not the sort of guy who would, in this cosmology, you know, Michael Bay notwithstanding, Optimus would have probably not shot Megatron just because he had the drop on him. you know, they would have had more of a, you know, give up, be a good guy, you know, and instead, even the betrayal would have, you know, not had as many teeth. But what happened in some ways, I think, is that Hot Rod stepping into it meant Optimus had to, you know, he had that moment of, I should have shot him, and he didn't.
Right.
Because Hot Rod was there. Hot Rod exists to stop the brutal murder of Megatron by Optimus the Hero Prime.
Yeah.
That's why he's there.
Oh, love it.
Yeah.
All right, Eddie. I'm looking at
that. I mean, same. I mean, like, I feel like Optimus was looking for an excuse not to pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if Hot Rod, like, I think with Mike, if Hot Rod not showed up, I think Optimus would have gone, you know, I could just end this war right here. I think it would have had that thought. So, also, I feel like Optimus is, many iterations of Optimus has a bit of a fatalistic streak. Like, he is very much that soldier of, like, you know, I'll just jump on the grenade. It's fine. It's like, no,
he's Captain America.
Yes, absolutely, in that regard. He will throw himself in front of anyone because that is what he does. So I have never been on train Hot Rod got Optimus murdered. I am on train Ultra Magnus got robbed, but.
Well, it's there's that difference of ultimate. Basically, Ultra Magnus, it really is, I'm just a simple soldier. He really is, you know, I mean, he's that guy who's an NCO who gets, you know, promoted, and he's now, you know, got a battlefield promotion to run the entire Fifth Army. You know, we're invading Europe. We got to go do this. And he's not ready for it. And what you see with Hot Rod is he goes through enough stuff to develop into somebody who can do it. But then they found themselves with this problem was Hot Rod had questions. Hot Rod wasn't always like Optimus. And Optimus was always, I know what to do. I'm going to deal with this. Just a side note. Yeah, my dad was one of those kinds of people. He was in the Air Force, and he was one of those kinds of men. My friends used to joke, yeah, your old man is Optimus Prime. And I thought, yeah, that's kind of wacky. And then I was like 17, and I ran across one of his, the guys who served under him, is after dad retired. And one of the guys served under him, and we're sitting in the O'Hare Airport, and we're talking about that. And he says, you know, if your old man had come in and said, we have to go to hell as part of the mission, we would have just said, what should we pack, sir? And they would have picked everything up and gone. You know, and I'm going, and I walked out there and said, I am never, ever going to be able to have that kind of, you know, commitment and love from anybody who ever works for me because, you know, I'm just not that cool. You know, but I'm thinking of that. And every guy I ever met, my old man was, you know, in charge of, all kind of went, yeah, your old man did it, you know? And we're talking Vietnam, we're talking, you know, years in the Air Force. But that was what Optimus was. He was a larger than life character anyway. And poor, you look at, you know, the situation with Ultra Magnus, you go, yeah, you're just kind of like his best sergeant, you know? And suddenly, like, you know, you're having to step into Eisenhower's shoes. Good luck, guy. Yeah, you know.
True. That's a lot.
And that is an incredible talent because from my time in the military and the many officers I'd known, I can name on two fingers how many people would have done that for. So that is incredible.
Yeah. No. You know, the funniest part was, years and years later, I ended up actually, my dad retired, and his boss, who was a general in the Air Force, had also retired and had started a business, one of those, hire people businesses sort of thing, employment agency. And he hired me. You know, I'm kind of going, okay, so I'm working for my dad's old boss, the general. Okay. And I'm thinking, I cannot fuck this up. not only do I disappoint my dad, but I disappoint the general as well. This is going to be, you know, I'm going to have to do this job right.
What you're saying is you're Ultra Magnus.
Yeah, that was kind of it. You know, I was Ultra. Yeah, I'm looking at the a mile and a half of my dad's shoes. And I'm going to get this ladder. I can climb up there. But at any rate, yeah, that's poor Ultra Magnus, you know, and in some ways, he's not adaptable enough, where Hot Rod goes from, you know, fishing with a kid to defeating, you know, the Sharkticons to, you know, leading the charge. Mm-hmm. And he shows he adapts the whole way.
Yeah, that's true.
Before we move on, because Eddie seems to have that we need to get moving face. I'm very familiar with it.
He's pointing at his watch right now. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to give the magic away of all of us on screens, Mike, but if you want to, you can. you mentioned when you were playing Megatron, he was a tank. But mm-hmm. I'm watching this movie, and Megatron is a gun that starts in his name. So can one of you explain to me how Megatron went from a gun to a tank?
Do you want to take this or shall I?
I mean, the short answer is toy legislation. It became illegal to sell toy guns.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, you never had a scene where, you know, some kid raised Megatron and said, pow, pow, and then somebody shot him, you know. And also, to be really honest, it always bothered me that Megatron, you know, would turn into a gun, you know, because he would be like, you know, take them out, Megatron. You know, and I'm thinking, if I were Starscream right now, I'd be going, yeet. You know? What are you doing? Yeet, you know, out into space, Megatron finally transformed. What the heck did I do? But
my favorite, is that, like, so Generation 1 Megatron is a pistol. Mm-hmm. They decide they're going to do a new generation of these toys. So Generation 2 Megatron comes out. They're making him a tank, and they make him the perfect stealth tank of green and purple camouflage. And I just love G2 Megatron unabashedly because it is the most ridiculous tank ever.
Oh, no, I love that. And recently in Transformers reissues, they have done all of the G2 figures in the G2 colors,
were
colors that, as I used to say, oh, my eyes are burning. And it was amazing because I actually got a bunch of them and Dolan gave me some and so forth. And I got them all together and it was like, it's the 60s all over again. You heard the sitar music as you were looking across all these pictures. You know? So, if I take acid, I'll see a Grimlock that is that color with was it blue, silver, tiger stripes, and an orange head. And so the green and orange or whatever Megatron, that was nothing, man.
No, that's true. I mean, the Robots in Disguise was a very nebulous concept in G2.
Yeah.
As I am always looking out for our listeners that may not be quite as geeky as some of us are, you keep saying G1 and G2.
Oh,
pray
yeah.
Tell me, Transformer experts and SMEs, what is a G1 versus a G2? Is there a G3? Is there a G7?
It's G19, you know. I'm handing that one to Chris.
Or sorry. Oh, no, that's Eddie.
I know.
Chris Gobot's
hey, I need more of this, my friend. Okay.
Short version is that when the Transformers sales were depressed, they decided they wanted to do a new issue of the toys. They re-released the cartoon as Generation 2, and they put a different CGI bumper around it and also a giant Optimus Prime puppet talking to a live-action kid. It was the 90s. It was weird. But as a result of Generation 2 existing, also there was a reboot of the Marvel comic, and it became very 90s and bleak in a bad way. But as a result of that, there was a backwards iteration that therefore the previous cartoon was retroactively dubbed Generation 1. And that was kind of stuck. So when you hear G1, G2, G1 is referring to the 84 to 87 cartoon continuity. And then each iteration after that is a derivation, Generation 2, Beast Wars, Robots in Disguise, blah, 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 blah.
And what makes it even more fascinating is that each generation, quotation marks, ended up with fans who came into the interest and the hobby at that time. And that's their picture of Transformers. So right. There are people out there who are looking at G2 with its eye-blinding colors and going, that's my Transformers. Yeah. And then I remember when Beast Wars came out, a friend of mine, a guy named Larry DiTilio, was one of the writers on it. And you know, he was kind of going, I'm getting crucified here by all these people who remember G1.
Robot not monkey.
You know, and they're all going, you know, Optimus Prime is a monkey, you know, and that led to literally the meme, you know, truck, not monkey, monkey, not truck, you know, and people were, you know, like fighting tooth and nail on the internet. I gather I wasn't involved in it then, but I remember, you know, Larry telling me about it going, they're taking it seriously, you know, and even now, you know, people who remember G1 are, you know, nicknamed G1ers and they're seen as like troglodytes, you know. Yeah, G1ers, they want it to all look exactly like it was in 1985 or whatever, you know.
Yeah, there's the Transformers Wiki, which, by the way, I unironically suggest people read even if they're Transformers fan, because it's hilarious. The TF Wiki does have an entire page called Ruined Forever, which is just about all the things that allegedly have ruined Transformers forever.
Oh, yes. It's in a lot of ways, it's funny because it's a real study of how fandoms work.
Yeah,
and it really is. And it also, it's, I think the strength of that fandom is that they have adapted. And so you go through, you know, Beast Wars, truck, not monkey, monkey, not truck. And then, you know, 10 years pass and everyone's going, Beast Wars was awesome.
Yeah.
And everyone except for those few G1ers is going, Beast Wars was awesome. Mm-hmm. And so then somebody does something else and they go, yeah, but it's not as good as Beast Wars.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, not as good as Armada.
Yeah. Oh, don't mention Armada. Just no. No Armada.
Anyway. All right.
Eddie, you want to move on. We can move on.
I'll stop asking. Mike's got to go, so we make sure we're taking his time. So
okay.
I'm going to skip over Optimus Prime's death scene. We already covered that. We covered it.
We covered it.
He's dead. He's on an orange slab.
Right. He's gray. Move on. Get over it. Optimus Prime died for our savings. Let's move on.
Do you want to read the whole thing? Would that make you feel better?
I will read it. Okay.
You have concerned podcaster face. I am procrastinator podcaster.
Oh God, you
should. Yeah.
Between us, you know, you are the frenzy to my rumble. On his deathbed, a fatally wounded Optimus Prime passes the powerful artifact known as the Matrix of Leadership to Ultra Magnus, naming him as successor as leader and reciting the prophecy of its power that will light the Autobots' darkest hour. It drops from Optimus' hands and is caught by Hot Rod, who hands it to Ultra Magnus. Optimus Prime then succumbs to his injuries and passes away. Forever, never comes back. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, en route to Cybertron, Astro Train, which is way too large, requests that the Decepticons jettison weights as he is too low on fuel to complete the journey, because that's how science works. Starscream goads the surviving Decepticons to dumping a group of their dying and wounded, consisting of Skywarp, Thundercracker, Shrapnel, Bombshell, and Kickback into space.
They did my man Thundercracker bad.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. With you. Totally with you. Starscream then personally casts the dying Megatron into space despite his protests. Drifting in deep space, the wounded Decepticons encounter Unicron, who offers Megatron a new body in exchange for his service in destroying the Matrix of Leadership, the only thing capable of destroying him. Megatron reluctantly agrees and is recreated into Galvatron, while the corpses of the other jettison Decepticons are reformatted into his new troops, Cyclonus, Scourge, and a group of Sweeps. Given a new spacecraft by Unicron, Galvatron is then sent on his mission to find and destroy the Matrix.
On Cybertron, Galvatron disrupts Starscream's coordination as Decepticon leader, implying it's as bad as a bad comedy. Before using his new particle beam laser cannon, altered mode to disintegrate him, Unicron enters Cybertron space, consuming the moons of Cybertron, including Autobot Jazz, Cliffjumper, Bumblebee, and alas, poor human Spike. Retaking command of the Decepticons, Galvatron leads his forces to seek out Ultra Magnus at the ruins of Autobot City on Earth.
Now, I never saw what that actually happened to Spike, if you think about it. Do we ever? We know the moon gets destroyed, but does Spike get away? I found that interesting because it meant the one human character that we had to deal with, it's never determined that he dies in that.
Right.
You know, somebody said, hey, you know, he doesn't have a figure anyway, and, you know, and we don't want to have the parents groups, you know, crucifying us for killing off a human dad, so he got away somehow.
Right. Wow. And the, okay, and the Japanese follow-up did actually assume that Spike had survived that.
Yeah.
Okay, you G1ers, what happened to Spark Plug?
he died of a heart attack before this movie even started.
Yeah. Where's their friend Chip, out, who's a computer guy? Huh?
I am mad about Chip being... I am mad at Chip is not in this movie.
Chip, I don't know. I mean, the problem was that I always thought by that time Chip would have built power armor for himself and would have been running around the landscape going, I'm not handicapped now. I mean, he was brilliant. And, you know, every friend I ever had who, you know, was a wheeler, who was, you know, in a wheelchair, they always like kit bashed their chairs like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the guys in Berkeley, I had several friends and they had power chairs. And, you know, they looked like they were, you know, doing, one of them looked like a damn Trans Am. It was like fire engine red with antennas. You know, I'm going, dude, that's really scary. Can I sit on your chair while we go up to 184 Camp?
I do want to say real quick in this scene, though, this led to the worst cognitive dissonance I had for like decades, because I went to go see it in the theater originally. And so I saw where Spike says, oh shit, what are we going to do now? And then it never showed up on the video. It was cut from the video release. And so for decades, I was convinced that I had imagined that didn't exist. And it wasn't until, like, I think it was a 20th anniversary DVD where they finally put it back in. I was like, thank you. I didn't imagine that.
Yeah.
Because they put it in to get a PG rating because they thought PG would do better financially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've already killed up half the universe.
Well, we can't see shit. You know,
back off a little bit, okay? Yeah, and then that would lead to another thing. I remember basically the sweeps and all that is battles for years as to who got changed into who.
Yeah.
Of the dying and dead, plane guys.
Yeah, because they were all done in black and white, so you don't know whether Thundercracker or Skywarp that got turned into Cyclonus, for example.
We see that all done in that kind of digital weird thing, so we don't know. And then they're totally different characters, you know. So you're going, okay, is that Thundercracker? Nobody's mad, you know.
Right. Anyway.
So
bad comedy. We're on bad comedy.
I promise not to make this a 20-minute deviation. We know that Megatron's voice changed, but does the voice change for the other actors since they changed to the sweeps and everyone else instead of the Insecticons? They use different voice actors for them also.
Yeah, because that would have solved the question we're still fighting out now, which is what sweep is, you know, which of the, I cannot think of the term now, that the generic term for if you're a jet plane in Transformers. The Seekers, right. And, you know, what we forget is that there were, you know, as many Seekers as there were, you know, color palette changes. You would see a group of Seekers and be like 47 guys in different colors. You go, I'm never going to see that guy again, you know.
Yeah.
But we never find out because their voices didn't stay the same. Cyclonus was a totally new character, you know, as, you know, Nimoy taking over, you know, and being Galvatron.
Right.
Mr. Spock is going to wreck the universe. Okay.
Although I just Googled because I was curious, and I found out that Roger Carmel played Cyclonus, who played Harry Mudd in Star Trek, the original series.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of crossover there.
Just weirdly deep cast.
All right, Eddie, do you want to read the whole thing now, and then we just do a quick...
I'll power through this, and then we'll just talk about whatever.
Or, before you do that, do we want to give Mike one more chance to read a paragraph before we move on? I don't want you to feel left out, sir. You're like part of the family. You're a guest. We invited you in for lasagna.
You can read if you want to, or I could do my blur impression, whichever you prefer.
At least if you do that, it'll get done fast.
Exactly.
Because of blur. Okay. Where are we now?
The surviving
Autobots escape into space aboard separate shuttles. Hot Rod, Cup, and the Autobot team of Dinobots are shot down by the Decepticons and crash land on a nearby planet. Ultra Magnus and his group escape by separating their spacecraft and fooling their pursuers into believing them to be destroyed. Damaged by battle, they continue on to the nearby planet of Junk with Weird Al Yankovic. Meanwhile, separated from the Dinobots in the crash, Hot Rod and Cup are taken prisoner by the Quintessons, a collective of tyrannical robotic aliens who hold kangaroo courts and execute prisoners by feeding them to their Sharkticons. Hot Rod and Cup learn of Unicron from Kranix, the lone survivor of the destroyed planet Lithome. After Kranix is executed,
throw him to the shark, Decon's not guilty.
Hot Rod and Cup escape, aided by the Dinobots and the small Autobot survivalist Wheelie. Oh, God, Wheelie. Who helps him to find an escape ship.
Bloody Wheelie.
All right.
Yes.
All right.
Thing.
The Autobots lead the Magnus fleet to a planet of junk where they begin to use scrap to effect repairs. Galvatron's forces then arrive and attack. Ultra Magnus scores the remaining Autobots and attempts to open the Matrix to no avail. He's destroyed by Galvatron, who seizes the Matrix, now intent on using it to defy and enslave Unicron. The Autobots are then attacked by territorial natives, Junkions, led by Wreck-Gar, who are then interrupted by the arrival of Hot Rod, Cup, and the Dinobots. Using Universal Greeting, Hot Rod then ceases the battle between the group and the Junkions to rebuild Magnus. Deducing that Galvatron has the Matrix, the Autobots and Junkions then fly to Cybertron. Galvatron attempts to open the Matrix in order to threaten Unicron, but cannot activate it. Enraged by defiance, Unicron transforms reveal a planetized robot form and beginning to destroy Cybertron. Decepticons counterattack the Galvatron being swallowed by a Unicron and Cloaked Matrix. The arriving Autobots rush to ship the Unicron's left eye and become separated while Unicron continues to battle Decepticons, Junkions, and Ultimate Cybertron. Daniel saves his father Spike and the others Autobots during the Unicron suggestion. Galvatron attempts to form an alliance with Hot Rod, but Unicron telepathically forces him to attack. Hot Rod is almost killed, but in the last second, safely advised nearby Matrix, his power to reach running into Robotics Prime, the new Autobot leader. Rodimus defeats Galvatron by hurling him into deep space and uses the Matrix power to destroy Unicron, essentially tearing him apart from the inside. Rodimus then reunites and escapes the other Autobots and Unicron's giant body disintegrates in a massive explosion. With Decepticons and the disarray from the underground attacks, the Autobots successfully take Cybertron and spell it towards end while Unicron's severed head orbits Cybertron.
Dun, dun, dun. You got the touch!
I just wanted to see if you could do it, really, is why I chose to do that. But
what? To do the blur?
If you could blur it the whole time. He's told me about it for a while now.
You're not John Mochita, but, you know, you're pretty good.
I mean, one of the exciting adventures about hearing loss is that you don't know how fast you're talking. So when I was a kid, I was constantly told to slow down. And so seeing a character on screen that talked as fast as I did was actually very exciting to me when I was a kid.
I like it.
But yeah, I mean, so the rest of the movie happens.
That happened.
Yeah. So this leads to my weird theory about Transformers the movie. Mm-hmm. And then the hot take is this movie is actually good, but why
this
it's
movie
good,
is great,
right?
It's amazing.
A lot of people are like, oh, it's good just because of nostalgia. It's like, no, one of the things I like about this movie and this scene, because I've had arguments to people like, why is every planet robotic? And my argument is that if you look at a lot of our myths and legends and tales, we tell them from a human perspective. And so all of the characters are human. Even sci-fi, everyone seems roughly human-shaped. So this is a Transformer war parable. So naturally, everything looks like them, which is a robotic life form. So this whole movie is just a Transformer legend. And it's how people, they tell legends about themselves. So naturally, the sharks are robotic, the fish are robotic, the Quintessons are robotic. Everyone's a robot because they're robots telling stories about themselves.
So I think a little bit of my take would be from more of a G2 perspective, look at that, is that eventually they go and sort of form this intergalactic council and they start going off into the other parts of the universe. They encounter different species of people, like humanoid people and everyone else. And this is them in sort of their galaxy area that is more robotically based. Like they came all the way over to Earth and Earth was more human based. So it depends on where they're at in like different galaxies.
And I'll throw another one in there, which is that when we start talking about the Quintessons, I asked Flynn about that a long time ago. And he said the Quintessons in the original plan were the ones who invented and put together these machine life forms.
Oh, okay.
Quintessons are all over heck and gone because they're a life form that has been spreading for millions of years, which is why you have all these planets is, you know, they land someplace and go, okay, I think we'll, you know, make some machine slaves here. And, you know, people like Megatron and all that are basically, well, we needed a tank and, you know, Optimus, we needed a truck. And that's theoretically why you have those life forms. One of the things I loved about IDW when they had the license for the Transformers comics was they showed the other side of the war and the fact that all these organics were just getting fed up with this 4 million year long war. You know, they're going like, by the time you get there, it's like if you see a Transformer, you know, out in space, you take your space battleship and you kill them.
Yeah,
you know. And there's at one point a wonderful scene, the IDW stuff, where you know that the ship, the Lost Light, is like 4 miles long. And one of the Galactic Federation cruisers pulls up alongside, and it's so big, it's like off the panel. Mm-hmm. You know, you realize, in the right circumstances, Megatron and the Cybertronians are an annoyance. You know? And there are people who, after, you know, a couple million years of this stuff, said, okay, that's it. You guys stay in your little corner of the universe, or we're going to yeet you into the sun, you know?
For me, that brings a more interesting question. Which do you adhere to? Do you adhere to sort of the TV series one where the Quintessons invented them all? Or I think the one of the comics that came out where there were like two opposing forces that fought for millions of years, and they sort of, one of them trapped them into two different planets, one mm-hmm. planet Cybertron and one planet Unicron.
Well, that whole subplot actually came out of the British editions of Transformers. It was a writer named Simon Furman who brought all the mysticism into it. And, you know, that was where we got things like Transformers with facial hair. You know.
Eddie's holding up his comic, by the way, since people can't see Eddie being.
I'm a total British nerd. Comic because I live here now and I can get access to them.
Sorry, Mike, you're saying.
No, I love it. Okay, then. But do you have the one that's Soundwave walking away saying, but the Shockwave, the Transformers are all dead, carved into the wall?
I don't. I had that of the American comic. I don't have the British version of that, but I just saw today, which of course dates this recording immediately, that they are releasing a toy version of that cover.
Yes.
I was like, oh, yes, I love that cover so much.
Yeah, everybody. I know someone who actually has a blow up of that cover on their wall, and
that's
like
a good cover.
Okay, but at any rate, we got once again sidetracked. What were we talking about?
What we do.
Anyway, I think Welcome one of the things that I think one of the things is that the Quintessons make more sense because, you know, even if you're going with the whole Primus is, you know, our god sort of thing and all that, why would he make, you know, the vehicles we see in Cybertron? And sure, they took on disguise forms, you know, among us. But we see stuff over time, including in the series, where, you know, you flashback in like video games, and you see Cybertronian trucks, and you're still going, why do I have a Cybertronian truck? And if I have a Quintesson who needs a truck, that makes sense. If I have a no Quintesson, why does Primus need a truck? You know, why did they take
Quintus these? Quintus need a spaceship.
Yes, exactly. Oh, exactly.
Oh.
And there Eddie earns his geek cred for the day. Yay! But yeah, I mean, it doesn't add up. But, you know, I think a lot of things in Transformers, you just end up, you know, hand waving. And, you know, sometimes that discussion, you know, is more for people, I think, to jump off and see what they can come up with. You know, I can't imagine how much Transformers fanfic there's got to be out there, you know.
Oh, there's a lot. And some of those people ended up writing for IDW. James Roberts wrote a bunch of fanfic, and now he wrote The Amazing Lost Light. And
Roberts.
Yeah.
And Roberts, you look at his stuff and you go, yeah, this is flat out science fiction. And if it wasn't Transformers, quotation marks, you would be talking about basically a war and recovery situation with a bunch of, you know, war-torn PTSD guys who managed to get on board an old freighter and go out to find themselves.
Yeah.
And they have stuff happen to them along the way, but it's all about, you know, recovery from a war. You know, the fact that there has been an effect on these million-year-old, you know, creatures that they have nightmares. They remember things. You know, they have lost people. You know, things which were never really asked in, you know, hell, they're not even really asking those questions in the Bay movies,
right?
You know,
oh, yeah, no. No.
And so, you know, it's kind of like when you see that, particularly in the stuff that Roberts was writing, he was asking some very tough questions, as well as, you know, things like, what kind of relationships do these beings have? How do you know? I mean, where do they go when they want to get drunk? You know, what do they do with energon?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We know you have to get going, Mike. So
unfortunately, yes.
So much for coming on, though. It was such a blast to do this.
We don't need to have this. We could sit around and talk. You know, well, poor Chris to death. Actually,
let's talk about the Japanese exclusive stuff.
Before you leave, though, Mike, you have to tell us who is your favorite Transformer. Who is your Transformer of choice? You cannot leave until you tell us that.
Oh yes,
I'll put you on the spot.
Okay, Skids.
Really.
Yes. Skids is in all the incarnations I've seen, Skids is the most adapted to the situation. You know, I mean, there's a point where Skids is getting, you know, his hood washed by a really cute human girl.
Yes.
And you're going, Skids is rolling with this, man. You know, why don't you get yourself in here and sit on my seat cushions? You know? I mean, so Skids does that. And then later in the IDW line, he basically has an interesting, complex super learning background.
Yeah.
And he has all these things going on. And then once again, Skids ends up with a girlfriend. And it ends up tragically. But, you know, for the 4 or 5 issues where that's developing, you're going, yeah, I'm shipping that. <You know? laughs> Like I said, I was kind of kidding around with that. And Lisa came in one day and kind of went, so you got a Skids figure, but when are we getting a Nautica so you can put them together on your desk? And I'm going, yeah, you know, one of these days. But that was because Skids is overall, I personally feel, like the most well-rounded in terms of he's not like, I don't know, he's not tied to Earth in a way like I really want to be an Earthian or whatever, or a human. He's going, okay, I'm here and I'm, you know, going to adapt to where I am. And if that involves a cute girl washing my hood, hey, I can work with this. So yeah, Skids. And also Skids is, he's boring. I mean, he's basically like a small
theoretician.
Yeah. He's basically, you know, like a small Japanese subcompact. So he doesn't have like super abilities or anything like that. And yet when they made his toy has all the weapons in the universe. I mean, you know, you open up, you got this little hatch back there and go, that's kind of cute. And then you go, okay, he's now robot. Oh, wait, arms out of the guns out there. Put it open up. There's another gun. Yeah. And by the time you're done, you realize that Skids has like 10 guns on him. So that's one hell of a hatchback, you know?
That's amazing.
So, yes, favorite is Skids, hands down. I'm also, to some extent, thanks to IDW, I am sympathetic to Megatron in that they gave more of a reason for why he was what he was.
Yeah.
And I like to think, you know, he started off as you know, Lenin or Che Guevara, and he ended up as Stalin.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you are going to have that. If you fight a million year war, you're going to have that happen. Things will change you. But as for my favorite, Skids. I have 4 different versions of Skids.
Oh, wow.
Part of them is people just giving it to me. But I love Skids because of that. And eventually they did do a Nautica. And I used to, in my old office, I used to have them on my desk.
Oh, that's awesome.
Doing, they were dancing in one of the scenes. So I've got them, you know, I had them like doing the dip and a whole bit like that. And
that's amazing.
My wife probably thought I was crazy, but
she doesn't know by now.
Marry me if you stop now.
Well, we know you have to go. So thank you for coming on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah. Glad we got it all put together.
Yeah. Real quick, if people, can people chat with you online, or you just done with social media?
I'm not done with social media, but I will tell you the truth. I've learned, as my wife likes to say, the downside of having become famous, which is weird. And, you know, I literally now have people coming up to me going, are you Mike Pondsmith? I'm going, do I owe you money? I had at one point, I was getting a surgical procedure done, and somebody from the hospital staff ran down to ask me questions about Cyberpunk, and I'm on a gurney.
Oh my God. They're like, are you?
And they go, are you the Mike Pondsmith? I'm going, what? You know, so what has happened is I have actually gotten Rob to kind of manage that for me, because it's one, overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And two, you know, there's so many people that I probably would end up talking to like I am with you guys. Mm. So, you know, people can drop me letters, but they're going to get lost in the shuffle because I can't even, you know, I just have a lot of people writing, you know, and I want to give people, you know, time, but it becomes, you know, who do you pick and when, you know? So guys, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Remember, do not show up when I am, you know, on my sick bed and ask me for a selfie. Because I will not like you for that.
Well, thank you again. Since you had to go, you don't know how to get a hold of Chris and I. We'll see you all next week on John Rules.
Okay, you guys take care.